Perek Chof Mishnah Hey. Kofetchikava Obenidbach. So suppose you've got yourself a seat, but this is an unusual kind of seat. It's a seat that you started off with a big piece of wood, and then you carve the seat out of it. So it's like one of these garden seats, supposed to look very, you know, very rustic. So you carved a piece of wood into a, not a chair, but a seat that you could sit in the wood. Okay. Now you put that on top of a nidbach. A nidbach is a row of stone or a row of bricks. If you attached it there and it's still usable, just because it's attached doesn't mean it's usable, not usable. You didn't build anything on top of it. So all that you did is you put a couple of screws into it to attach it to the nidbach so it doesn't fall over. So in that case, it is still considered to be a chair because you could still use it. Or suppose what you did was you put it down, you didn't screw it in, and you continue to build with stones or bricks around it. Why in the world would you do this? Very simple. You want it to have a window, and you use this thing to put in place so that while the bricks were drying, they would dry into a window shape, and then you would take it out. So again, obviously, in neither case is it a non-kli, because it still can be used as a seat, so it doesn't become a separate kli. And in the case where you built around it, it's bichlal, not even attached, because you only put it there to build around it. So over there, it could still be tameh midras. And therefore, if a zov would sit on it, it's bekabel tuma. But if you did both, if you were screwed it in and you built around it, so at that point, it's not a kli at all. You can't sit on it because it's surrounded by bricks. And it's not just going to slide out if you want to read it. The same thing is true of what do they call the those boards that we use to make ceilings with? Sheetrock. They call it in the States sheetrock. There's different words for it. And, what do they call it in South Africa? Sorry? I'm not hearing sufficiently. Okay, but anyway, if you write it, I'll understand what you're saying. So anyway, in those days, what they used for that type of board was actually a mapatz, which was made out of a reeds. And then they would take these big reeds and they would use them as ceiling covering, screw them into the ceiling. And then you would put the plaster over it, rhinolite. Okay, rhinolite board. So they would use the mapatz in those days. So imagine this to be a question of the same idea, but of course a mapatz is something that is ra'ui for midras, because it's used, if it wasn't going to be used for this, you lie down on it. So in this case, if you put the mapatz, you screwed it into the roof beams, but you did not attach any kind of plaster to it, which is what's usually done, or vice versa, you plastered it over, but you have not screwed it in, then it's easy to still use it for lying on. You can simply take it down off of the beams, and you can still use it. So because of that, it would still be tameh and is considered to be midras. So it still maintains its original kli. But if you screw it in and you put plaster on it, then it's tahor, because over there you're not going to be taking it off very easily, and therefore it can't be used with the plaster to lie on. So because of that, it loses its shame. Now, the same thing is true where you've got a ki'ara. Let's say you take a plate and you attach this plate to something like a cabinet that you have, right? So you go ahead and you're koveya et b'shida teva u'migdal. It depends where you screw in a plate. Which direction did you attach it in? Where did you glue it on? If it's facing upwards and it's kederach kabalatat, it's still usable. So then the plate retains its shame of a plate to be mekabel tuma. But if you took the plate, put it upside down, and glued it upside down, shelo kederach kabalatat, it's not functional, and therefore it is just part of a cabinet. But a cabinet is mekabel tuma, and because of that, the plate cannot become mekabel tuma. More cases of midras would be a sadin. I'd say you have a sheet. A sheet you can lie on, it becomes tameh. But sheets are often used for making into a curtain. Or if you're a capitan, like Sir Richard, the first thing you think of when you see a sheet is a sailboat, obviously. Uh-huh. I'd rather be sailing. And therefore, if you actually take the sheet and you now turn it into a sail for a boat, so then in that case, it would become Torah from Mitras, but it's still a usable kli, so it would be Mekabel Tumas Meis. So that would be what, actually we spoke about today, what makes it a kli to be Mekabel, to lose the Shem Nidras, you'd have to do something with it, and to become a kli to be able to be a sail for the boat. So at what point does it become Torah? Meimatayit Tahorato. Says Beit Shammai, from the time that it's broken, meaning you put the scissors to it to cut it into shape for the sail, you cut it down in order to use it as a vilon for your window, that is a maisa, and therefore it will lose its tumas midras only with a maisa, not with a decision, because of today's Gemara in Shabbos. Beit Hillel Omrim, Beit Hillel says, you don't need to do that. All you needed to do is not to cut it down, but as soon as you put on the loops on it that are going to allow it to be attached to the mast, are going to be allow it to be attached to the curtain rod. So at that point, it's already, you've done a maisa that has changed it. Rabbi Akiva says, you don't even need to do that. It's enough to simply attach it. So if you attach it to the mast, then even if you made no change in the sheet per se, Rabbi Akiva holds that a completely new functionality creates a new kli if it was done with an act. And that is enough of an act over here to give it a completely new shame, a shame of something that is not midras-oriented. Now, speaking about these mapatsim, or machatzalot, machatzalot is a mat, and sometimes, as we said, you'll make it as a board to make a ceiling with, then it's not considered to be roi for midras, obviously, once it's kavua, as we just said. There are times that you will use this mat very conveniently, which is done today, for your schach, for a sukkah. So it was made lechatchila in order to be the schach for a sukkah, then it's not roi la midras, and because of that, it's not mekabel tuma, and therefore it provides a convenient sichuch. You better make sure that you have a good hechsher on that kind of schach, because you need to really know that it was mechuvan for that purpose. Now, the question is there a way that we could determine a mat's usage? Now, the thing is that sometimes what they would use in a mat to make it stronger was that the soft mat would have embedded in it some hard fabric, hard material that was too hard to sleep on. So you often see this kind of thing. We put like plastic through something that is tough, but then the parts between the plastic is easy. Ah, okay. So you've got these plastics. You see the green. Thank you. You see the green? So the green are plastic tubing, which is too tough to sleep on, and you use it as a way to strengthen the mat. So now the question is this considered to be a usable? It's pretty uncomfortable to get those tubes sticking into your body if you're going to lie across it, right? You're certainly not going to want to do that. So what would be considered to be a properly comfortable plasticized? This, by the way, is very often found on deck chairs, right? So you have a deck chair which has in it parts that are soft, but in order to be able to maintain the strength of the material when it's stretched out like that, there's things in it that are harder, and you need to make sure that you don't put your back on that. So the question is, what's the shear? How would it be mekabel tuma, b'midras, and when not? So amachatzela chasala kanim la'orka. So as you made these hard pieces of plastic, obviously in those days it wasn't plastic, it was kanim, thick reeds, that you would put along its length instead of along the width. If it's put along the length, you can't really lie on it because you're going to end up getting some part of your anatomy on it. It's going to be uncomfortable. So those kind of mats were meant to be used specifically not for lying on, and those are the equivalent of the sheetrock. You use them for putting up on the wall or putting up a ceiling with. And that's tar. The Chachamim Omrim, The Chachamim say, no, no. It's only if you crisscross like an X, so you use a Greek chi, yes, then there's no way you can avoid it because you're always going to get that thing in your back, so you won't do that. Then for sure it can't be used. But otherwise, you can basically find a little place where you can lie along the area where there isn't something hard. So then if you did it along the width, if you've got four tvachim, it's not like a lot of space, but it's enough space for you to go to sleep on. Anything more than that is enough space to go to sleep on. Four tvachim is already that, and down is going to be tar, because you can't fall asleep like that into such a small area. My gosh, that's about the size of a sochnut bed. Nobody ever got to sleep on those. Okay, so now that would be one of the rules. Another thing would be the problem of making sure that your mat doesn't fall apart. So how would you make sure it doesn't unravel? So you would make these little knots that look like fringes along the ends. So that means you would tie a knot there. And the question is, what happens if something goes wrong and unravels with those things? And now the whole thing is going to ultimately fall apart if it starts coming apart. So if it got split, nech lekala rochba, along the width, Rabbi Yehuda's mitayer, because then you do not have anything knotted to prevent unraveling at the ends. In the middle, it's broken. And what's going to happen is it's going to start spreading. And once it starts spreading, it's just going to fall apart. And the whole thing is going to fall apart. There you go. In the place where it was cut, it's going to fall apart. V'chein ha-matir roshei ha-ma'adanim. The same thing would be true if you untied those pretty knots at the ends. So it's going to be tar. The whole thing's going to unravel. Nech l'kol orka, however, if it was cut along the length of it, and you've got each piece has got three knots that are still whole on either end, so that you've got six tvachim that is not going to be is not going to fall apart. So then, putting three knots together, you've got three tvachim. If you've got three tvachim or six tvachim, then you've got enough basically for it considered to still be a kli, because it's not going to unravel, and six tvachim is enough to lie on, we said before, and therefore it would be tamei. Then there's another issue, which is, at what point is it considered to be completed? Because remember, kol ha-kelim yordim lidei tumatam b'machshava. So that would mean it would be usable at the point that you're normally going to use it, otherwise it's considered to be golmim. So golmim are not finished. When does it become tamei? So, that is the standard that we've had many, many times. You've got to make sure that you trim the reeds, because otherwise there's these little prickly pieces and they're going to drive you crazy in trying to use it. So it's got to feel smooth to the hand. We call that nikivat of the various whatever material it was. That's considered to be the Gemara Malacha. And even if you wanted to make it prettier and so on, this is not such a chashuv kli that would be the equivalent of a kli matechet, where we said anything missing that you intend to still do would mean that it's still gomei kli matechet. This is gomei kli eitz, which even if you had wanted to decorate it, it's perfectly usable as it is now. Therefore, once somebody lies down on it, he is lying down on a complete kli.